This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Krista Harden, President and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Krista Harden next. Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization sub-agency to attack a safe American-made weed-fighting tool. This tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. In the midst of June Dairy Month, we pause this week and recognize the significant impact dairy exports play in the bottom line of the dairy industry in the U.S. Krista Harden, President and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, says export growth in North America and around the globe have grown exponentially.
When U.S. DEC was established over 30 years ago, we were exporting 3%, 4%, 5% maybe a year of what was left over, if you will, in the dairy portfolio. Now we're getting closer to 20%. We are moving product around the world. We were up year over year 15% in April from, that's, the latest numbers we have. April to April, we're up 15%. So the question for a dairy farmer would be, if I don't have these other markets outside of the U.S., what would I do with all this dairy products? So I think it makes a difference to their bottom line more and more.
Does the export market look for the same products as the U.S. consumer?
Well, we don't export a whole lot of the gallon of fluid milk, frankly. It's just too heavy. So we do ship some fluid to Mexico a little bit. There's some fluid going into Canada that comes back in finished products. But by and large, it's a different portfolio mix. It's, a lot of countries around the world do drink and enjoy fresh milk, but it's mainly, provided locally from farmers in whatever country or area we're talking about. So we're talking about a different mix of products that are exported. A lot of folks think about our powders, our other ingredients. They've been the workhorses of U.S. dairy exports for years, but we're also starting to export a whole lot of cheese, which has been very exciting for us as we've seen increased production processing in the U.S. of cheeses. We're now finding homes outside of the country, up 20% last year and up again, this year as well. We're continuing to grow. Demands for protein are real. They're not just in the U.S. So that's another really growth area. And of course, we have a lot of butterfat right now, so that's going out of the country as well.
So who are our best customers and where around the planet is our best potential to add to that list of solid customers?
Well, you have to start with Mexico. It is the best partner and is the best customer we have. We've invested a lot as an industry in building relationships in Mexico, helping their producers and processors grow demand. An awareness of the value of having dairy in the diet. So, we start with Mexico. Great relationship with Mexico. We also sell a lot to Canada. Clearly, our neighbors, close proximity, light-thinking customers in many ways. So Mexico and Canada certainly come to mind. Traditionally, we exported a lot to China. That is not the same today, although we are selling product in China. That's rebounded a bit. But we sell a lot of product in Korea, in Japan, Southeast Asia, Latin America beyond Mexico, Central America for certain. Smaller countries, smaller populations, but collectively with CAFTA, Central America is becoming more of a market. And then other parts of South America, like Colombia, Peru, even Argentina at some point, we hope, will be a market. And in the Middle East, right now, the conflict, the war there has caused a little bit of pause in products there. but we do have an office there and we do see potential there. And surprisingly, even we're selling some products in Australia, a dairy producing country, a large one. Really we have opportunity across the globe for our products as the demand continues to grow.
So let's talk about our competition. Who are our toughest competitors? And Krista, are they playing fair?
Well, no, they don't always. Some do more than others. The EU is certainly a very prominent and worthy competitor. They are a long history in dairy and dairy products, and their reach is far. Our aggravation, and I'm using a very nice word for this discussion, with the EU is they continue to want to press upon artificially limit our use of names, of common food names for certain types of cheeses like Parmesan or feta. They think they own those and control those and don't want us to be able to use them. So they use that as a non-tariff barrier in many ways, or try to, in markets across the globe. Our other big competitor is New Zealand. They have great products. They're known for their dairy. It's a huge industry for that country, and they are definitely a big supplier of milk powder, of cheese, of butter. Australia, it comes into the mix as well with high-quality milk powders and cheese. And Argentina and Uruguay are also kind of emerging sources of dairy products on the global market. But, you know, we start with the EU, and they certainly they put up a good fight, I'll say.
Well, with the geographic indicators that they are trying to enforce, not just within their member countries, but also with those whom they trade with, mm-hmm. How big of an obstacle is this?
Well, it's market by market for us. We really, it's like whack-a-mole. If you remember the Child's Game, where you fix it someplace and it pops up another. They're very aggressive with their trade agreement stance. I mean, they are, making deals across the globe, bilats all over the world. And a big driver is this geographic indicator language that would limit, after an agreement, even places where we have a trade agreement, they try to supersede our language in many cases. So we're always on alert. We're working constantly with the U.S. government, with our partners in country to let us know what, the EU is trying to do and their newly minted trade agreements across the world. They're very aggressive, frankly, and they have a mission, and it is to protect their cheeses and markets and create havoc for us, especially where we've got, we've made some headways. They don't like the competition from the U.S. with our cheeses.
From the global challenge of selling dairy products, what are the policies, or what is the legislation, or what are the trade agreements or the financials that would help you be successful in moving U.S. dairy to global customers?
Well, first of all, I'll thank the administration for being as aggressive as they have been on trying to reach agreement, establish frameworks with some very key markets. Indonesia comes to mind, Vietnam, Thailand, Cambodia, Ecuador. Those are just some examples of being aggressive, being proactive, really going in there and putting dairy front and center in some of these discussions. That's extremely helpful on the tariff side, on helping us get in to these countries. It's also non-tariff barriers that can be a problem that you kind of get hidden, and kind of get lost and not quite as sexy as talking about tariffs. But they're so important when you're talking about requirements from other countries for their imports. It can be certifications, licenses, standards, just paperwork that can be, just so weighty and tying down the ability to get a product in. Plant registrations, for instance, just, a foreign country saying this plant is not registered, to sell to our country, and it can sit on someone's desk or somewhere for months and months or years. So it's a lot of the non-tariff barriers that we have to chip away at. USTR has been extremely aggressive and appreciative that these are hindrances, even if you address a tariff issue, there are other problems. So it's understanding market by market what those requirements are, being aggressive to work through them, help the country understand this is not acceptable, and that our members can go head to head in the marketplace with anybody. I believe that full heartedly with great products, but it has to be a more level and fairer playing field.
Where does the U.S. Dairy Export Council stand on the review of USMCA, formerly NAFTA?
Well, I'll go back, and I've been around long enough that I remember when it was called NAFTA. And at that point, we were exporting about $250,000. That was in 1994 of milk solids. Today, it's over $4 billion in those markets. So it has been instrumental in the growth. I mentioned earlier the importance of Mexico. It really helped us get in that market. Like thinking, like eating, in many ways, the U.S. domestic market. So it was a great fit for us to get in there, take charge, and help that industry, their dairy industry as well, grow demand, and the U.S. becoming quite a source for them. So, you know, there is not all perfect always with Mexico, but it certainly has really been a big help. USMCA has been a huge help, and going back to the NAFTA days as well. Canada, a little bit of a different story. Their dairy industry is quite a powerful voice in that country, and we have had difficulties with the Canadians even honoring their commitments from the last round. So this review, we're starting with, hey, first, honor what you already promised. Help us get more dairy into Canada. You know, tariff rate quotas, TRQs, I'm sure a lot of folks are aware of what those are. Making sure that they are, you know, administered fairly to U.S. Suppliers. And then we'll go from there. But we, you know, the first step is to make sure you're honoring what you already committed to. And then we have other issues that we certainly would like to address with Canada. So this review is important.
So in terms of the review, instead of writing new, is it a fact that we haven't enforced the deal? Is there not enough teeth in the deal to hold individual countries accountable?
Well, that's a fair question, Jeff. We lost a couple of rounds in the last administration. We, you know, the administration, you know, filed complaints. We went through the normal processes, and we actually lost. So I don't know about the teeth. It's just how it administers, how there's so many workarounds that the Canadians find a way to do. So it's certainly tightening the language and holding them accountable. And, you know, our governments, no matter who's president, sees what the Canadians have been doing and have tried to help us as an industry push back. I think, you know, dairy is probably maybe not number one on the list, but very, very top of the list for the administration in these discussions and this review. So we appreciate that support very much. But we can't move forward until we fix what hadn't happened in the last round, but we don't want to stop there either. I'll say there are other things that we think we should be able to accomplish, and this large agreement should work better for us.
Let's fold back then another layer. So what areas need to be addressed? And in the same vein, what needs to be left alone?
Well, I'll say, you know, at least, and I'm going to pick on Canada just a little bit more. We really thought that we had more access to their market through the TRQs. We were promised that. We also want to hold them accountable for their artificially low priced dairy protein products that they, you know, compete with. They kind of, again, not below market value there. We need to protect our common cheese names from Mexico for sure. That's something that we have to make sure that we do. And really how the Canadian government administers their TRQs seems to almost intentionally be designed to limit our access. So we really have to make sure that we work on that very closely. It's really given the majority of the TRQ access to our competitors in Canada. I mean, not to the U.S., but to competitors. So there's some very specific things that we have to work through. By and large, the agreement with Mexico is working and is working well. We want to make sure there's no slippage there other than, you know, the common food names. That's something we keep our eyes on for sure there. So we just have got to make sure that we're using the review process to hold the Canadians accountable for what they already committed to. And there's other things that we hope that we can, you know, address, but, you know, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves either. We want to make sure we don't ignore what we need.
Does this need to remain a trilateral agreement, or would you be comfortable if there were two bilateral agreements?
Yeah, you know, that's a big question. I think we have to look at the holistically of what's best for the whole, you know, for our country and not just for dairy. We don't want to punish the, you know, the Mexicans. Things are working well, but you know, we are North America. And we should have this, you know, kind of effort together as a unit, as a block, and work closer together. I'd hate personally to see it unravel and be broken into pieces. I hope it doesn't come to that. It shouldn't have to do that. We will see what the, you know, our government thinks they can accomplish, but not taking our eye off the importance of this. Since 1994, we've had this agreement, no matter what the name was, to work together as this trading block and treat, you know, us as neighbors and as friends, as partners in North America, like we matter to each other, as we well do. We have so much in common. We should be able to work through these issues. I don't know if breaking apart is going to, what we will accomplish. Certainly not wanting to kick the can down the road. That's for certain.
So speaking of kick the can, if we kick it for two more years, the 2018 Farm Bill would have been in place for 10 years.
Yeah.
So what are the things inside this Farm Bill 2.0 that are very important to the Dairy Export Council?
Well, there's one for certain. It's called the Safety Act. It's something we've been talking about already, about protecting, you know, geographic indicators. That is something that would really, you know, put it in language, codifying it in legislative language in the Farm Bill would be very helpful, I think, and just giving it a lot of teeth, if you will, in negotiations. So we're very supportive of the Safety Act. Obviously not just dairy, but the dairy names are included in that, and we would love to see that. We also support mandate funding of $200 million for therapeutic use foods. I don't ready to use therapeutic foods. I'm sorry, roughs. But these are this dense paste that incorporate milk powders and peanuts, two of my favorite things, to combat severe cases of malnutrition. So it's very critical, I think, for the hungry of the hungriest in the world, severe malnutritioned people in the world, and making sure there's funding for that. And this continues. It's been a very good, I think, wedding between the peanut industry and the dairy industry. We hope to see that continue. We also support Food for Peace program from state to USDA. That would be kind of cool to see. And of course, we support MAP and FND, the reauthorization, redesign of those funds for those programs. The funding increasing, we're critical. We use them very much so in our industries. Other ag cooperators and industries do. So we'd love to see those included as well.
So the dietary guidelines that have come out for the U.S. and the MAHA movement in the U.S., are we the only country in the world that are talking about whole and natural and better nutrition? Is that just a U.S. thing, or is this a global trend that the U.S. dairy industry has an opportunity to play a part in?
Well, I don't know, you know, about all of it being shared by everyone, but clearly there's an interest in proteins. There's interest in healthy diets, less processed foods in many cases, in many places. It's hard to look at the entire world and all of our markets, because some are very well established, high income countries. Some of our markets are not. And they're just looking at the very basics of nutrition, which dairy can provide. So clearly there are markets where they're similar to ours and looking at many of these issues, and others are looking just to have basic nutrition, and they're very, very much aware that dairy can help do that. I talked just now about the RUTFs. Those, you know, that kind of market was severely malnutrition to developing countries that are looking for how do we increase, you know, dairy in the diet and protein in the diet and healthy nutrition to well-established markets as well. So it's hard to kind of characterize just one movement or one trend in the U.S., I mean, in the world, as similar to the U.S. There's certainly elements of that across the globe, but not everywhere and not every place where we are selling dairy and hope to sell dairy. We're also looking at emerging markets, maybe not even short-term, but mid-term and long-term markets in certain parts of the globe as well. So for us to be successful, we have to look at the trends and all of these pockets and regions of the world.
Well, as a journalist for several decades now, I know that when Krista Harden's name is involved, it's done right. And certainly you have played your role here at the Dairy Export Council. You and a number of other women that I can name that I can't imagine agriculture without them being involved, all the way from national leadership and international leadership down to the farms and communities. You were instrumental in this being recognized as the International Year of the Woman. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, thank you for the, my face is red. You can't see me, but thank you for the very, very kind words. And I appreciate it's when you look at your career and your life and you think of what motivates you. And having grown up on a peanut farm in Southwest Georgia where my parents worked, you know, side by side and recognizing their hard work, their sacrifice and their commitment to this industry. I do what I do to keep more farmers on the farm. That is my biggest motivation. And recognizing the International Year of the Woman Farmer really did start over a decade ago and starting to realize that we should showcase, highlight, recognize, appreciate the contributions of women and, you know, in helping to feed and nourish all of us. My guess is it's been, you know, women in farming, since we started eating as a people. A lot of times their efforts were not even measured. They were not appreciated for certain, even in the Ag Census. And when I was at USDA, I worked to make sure we did, that the Ag Census accounted for those contributions of all family members, including women, not just called farm wives. You know, my mama used to say she's a farm wife, and I'd say, was daddy a farm husband? I got the laughs just like you did, because we just didn't see it that way. And we have a different, you know, way of looking at the contributions. I love working in dairy because we have such strong dairy, women who are involved in agriculture on their own operations and lead their leaders as well. My chair of the U.S. Dairy Export Council is a woman farmer from California who farms with her brother, came back to her family farm, lived off the farm, worked in San Francisco, came back with the passing of her dad. Just remarkable leadership as well. So having all of the world look at these, the women who are doing the back raking work in fields and barns and pasture lands, wherever, or the mind bending work in an office, you know, making sure that their products are marketed and the books are kept and the insurance is bought, equipment is, you know, is in good working condition, whatever it might be, these contributions deserve to be recognized. And so for at least a year, we're taking time to say, hey, we see you, we recognize you, and we thank you. And it is one of the most rewarding things of my career to see this come to fruition, to see everyone, you know. And it's not, I always say it's not, you know, a competition about the men work, the women work, they work together. And just about every successful farm I know, there's, you know, multiple people giving, caring, sharing, working, really carrying the burden, sharing the burden of what it means to farm and ranch these days. It's tough work. There's no doubt about it.
Well, Krista, I know you've had your traveling heels on and you've been out of the country a lot and constantly on the go. Thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Krista, you're the guest and today you got the last word. Take us home.
Well, I'll just say thank you and mainly thank you to all the farmers in the world. My goodness, men, women, tall, short, here, there, it doesn't matter. We're all so grateful for their contributions to make sure we are nourished as a people. Some of us have more food available than others, but no matter what, it started with a farm. It started with a farmer or farmers. And so I just say thank you and a special thank you to the U.S. dairy industry. Goodness gracious, they're hardworking. Bless them, bless them, bless them. And thank you, Jeff. It's always fun to chat with you.
Our thanks to this week's guest, Krista Harden, President and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. Our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.